Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Except today, of course, I'm doing a fantasy book. I'm finishing up this fantasy trilogy, the first part of this fantasy series by R. Scott Bakker. Called The Prince of Nothing is the three books, and it goes The Darkness That Comes Before. I reviewed that a few episodes ago. The Warrior Prophet, which I did last episode, and today I'm going to be talking about The Thousandfold Thought, which is quite tricky to say. When I was started this kind of reread of this series, I started off with it. I went onto Audible, got the first audiobook, 20 hours, narrated by David DeVries, and it's like very good. Next book, 23 hours, a little bit longer, 3 hours, 38 minutes, just under 3 hours longer. And then this one comes up, 17 hours and 26 minutes, which is like 6 hours shorter than the previous book in the series. Now, I remember talking about this the last time I spoke about this this book, which I'll look on this episode list here, back on episode 84. I'd read the first two books and then kind of thought I'd talk about the whole series after reading the third book. I think that was back in 2009 or something, so that's quite a long time ago. And or 2010 maybe, I'm not sure. When I read that, I was like, oh, this third book was a bit disappointing, because I got to what I thought was the end, or what I didn't think was the end of the book, and there was a big chunk of the book still to go, and then it ended up by saying, and now this last big section of the book is an encyclopedic appendix, and it was like, this character did this, this, and this, this historic place, this, this, and this, and it went back into kind of lots of backstory, kind of laying it out step by step in some ways, and saying, oh, this thing happened here, this thing happened there, you know, like encyclopedic, and that was quite a big chunk of the end of the book, probably about a quarter of the book, or maybe not quite a quarter, but a big chunk of the end of the book. And I realized, of course, with this and the audiobook, all of that has been left off, which does make me think, like, oh, maybe they could have done that, maybe they just read all of that out. It isn't narrative, but it would have meant that this last book as an audiobook wouldn't have been 6 hours shorter than the previous book and 3 hours shorter than the first book in the series. But in a way, I don't really mind about that, because, to be honest, I probably wouldn't have listened to it anyway. And I know that because at the start of book two, there was this section called What Came Before, and it sort of kind of wraps up the story of book one, like getting all of the characters into position. And when I was listening to the audiobook, I really enjoyed that part. But then at the start of book three, it's like, what came before? And I realized that the first 45-minute chapter or 50-minute chapter of the book was just going back over what happened in book number one and book number two. But I'd literally just, like, the day before finished book number two, and I didn't really need a whole what came before, which, so that could have been handy. So that was like another 45 minutes to an hour that I didn't listen to at the start of the book. So in the end, I only got like maybe 16 and a half hours worth of audiobook out of what I was really wanting, a big chunky fantasy book, because that's what you want from fantasy, isn't it? Big and chunky. Except in this case, in this book, maybe not. So I must say, another reason that that I'm probably not going to have a lot to say about this book is that I thought, well, maybe I just won't bother rereading this one, because I really enjoyed the first book. This is when I was thinking about this. So I was talking to people on the SFBRP listener group. They say, hey, are you going to do a reread of this series? And I was like, I probably wouldn't do a reread of the whole series. I'd probably just do the first book and the second book of the first series. And it hasn't been long enough ago that I read like the next two books the first two books of the next trilogy. So I thought, well, I'll probably just read the first two. I didn't really enjoy the third book very much. I thought it was a bit of a disappointment, a bit of a letdown, so I probably won't read that. But, of course, after finishing the second book, this read-through, I was like, oh, that was really good. I better just read the third book. I better just spend an Audible credit, get the book, read it, see what it sounds like, see if it stands up, see if I enjoy it better this time or I didn't enjoy it better. And so I went back on my previous plan of actually just stopping after the second book on this reread, and I wish I had done that. I was actually more disappointed in this book this second time through, and it works less well as an audiobook. I think mainly because, oh, I didn't get that appendix at the back of it, and just the way that the book is structured just doesn't work so well as an audiobook compared to the previous ones. So let me go through some of the issues here. First of all, the whole start of this third book again, you should have probably listened to my previous episode to get the full fullness of this episode out, all of the stuff, because I'm not going to go over the story too much. I've talked about that in the last few episodes about this series. But as I mentioned at the end of the last episode, the end of the last book finishes in a very satisfying way. It's sort of like, okay, they do this, and they're always saying how it tells the story of the of this holy war that's going on a journey. It goes through these deserts, it goes across here, there's lots of battles along the way, you find out, you know, who's controlling it, what the struggles are, you know, the triumphs and all that kind of stuff. And that's what you get all the way through the book. It always comes back to, you know, there is some side stories where, you know, a Achaemenian, who's this sorcerer, he goes off in this different direction, and these other people do some other things, they go on like slight side journeys, and something doesn't, but it all comes back down to what is the holy war, who is in control of the holy war, and what is the character? You know, the holy war itself, like the different armies become the character, the main character of the book. But here, you don't have that in the Thousandfold Thought of the third book in this series. Because in the second book, The Warrior Prophet, that he kind of finishes up that story. At the end of it, it's like, yes, now that has come, that, you know, that whole thing has come full circle. Well, not full circle, but it's gone on a full, complete story arc. The character of the Holy War has been established. Someone has won out. Other people haven't won out. There's a big battle in the end, and it comes to a resolution. And it starts in the second book, and it's just like, well, what are we talking about now? Well, actually, all of the stuff that the Holy War didn't need, like the people within the Holy War who were against the Holy War, they've been defeated. Like Confess has been defeated. Now, in the previous books, he was awesome because he was the only one who was standing up against Kellis, the main character, the main protagonist in the book, who is, you know, half hero, half villain, not quite sure, you know, very, very complex there. And Confess was kind of like all antagonist, but also kind of maybe slightly heroic. Well, not heroic, but he was the one who was standing against someone who was doing something bad. But were they? So it was a really good, you know, there's some really good conflicts there and some really interesting character work. Whereas in this book, we suddenly follow along, but it's like, no, but this guy's been defeated. Why are we spending time with him? And there's a lot of stuff with Confess and Nea, and those are both the people who could stand against Kellis. So it comes back to this whole thing, you know, when people talk about James Bond, they say, oh, James Bond is only as good as his villain. So if there is a villain who is a really good Bond villain, it's going to be a good movie because you've got someone to fight against. And this is what happens here, or what's missing throughout this book, this third book, is that the person that Kellis is fighting against only turns up in like the last few chapters of the book. And it's really not satisfying that he doesn't have anyone to fight against. He has full control of the Holy War, so there's nothing changes within the Holy War. It starts off and he's in charge, and it ends off and he's just slightly more in charge, but not really. But what I wanted was that continuous battle with him and Nea and him and Confess, and it's just not there. There's nothing there at all, which is a pity, because then you have Confess and Nea going up against each other, and you're just like, this is not what I signed up for. This is not interesting at all. And Nea is just moping around, and Confess is just waiting for people to turn up, and there's a bit of battle and a bit of this, but it's just not. I mean, individually it could be interesting, but it's such a break from the previous book and such a letdown, it's just not what I'm looking for. Meanwhile, Achaemenian is teaching magic to Kellis, which could be interesting, except all the way through the first two books of this series, I really liked it that the magic wasn't explained. It was just like, oh, we know that there's different power levels, and then when there's battles including magic, and when magic happens, it kind of feels more magical, and I really liked that. And you actually kind of got to know the magic through the use of it and the use of that magic furthers the story, you know. It's there for story reasons, and that's why when I was reviewing another big chunky fantasy book recently, the second of the Brandon Sanderson's, oh, I can't remember what the name of the book is, but his big series, his Way of Kings series, I was reviewing the second one of that, and the worst parts of those books all of Brandon Sanderson books is when it's sort of like, and now we will have a lesson in magic, and this is how the magic system works, and this is what you do here, you know, and all of that is missing from the first two books of this, and it's, and the books are better because of it. But here is something like, oh right, okay, someone has to learn magic, now let's do the magic, and it is very much like, and now you say these words here, and you do this here, and you do this, and this works this, and then now all the rules. And while it's interesting because it kind of confirms what you were thinking about, you know, the previous magic, and it's like, oh, it's good to actually get answers to this kind of stuff. Oh, that's why that magic works. Oh, that's why those people can't see that magic. Oh, that's what this, you know, and it does answer all those questions. It doesn't do it in a satisfying way, like within the story. It's just sort of like, and now a magic lesson. You're like, great. Even though the content of those lessons is interesting, and it's quite kind of interesting to look at, like, the metaphysics of it and what's actually happening there, is good. Just the way that it just halts the story, even whatever story that there is, just halts even more. And then there's other points, and I've mentioned this before with the review that I did of 1984 by George Orwell. One of the things that actually stops that book being a 5-star book and knocks it down to a 4.9-star book, was that at one point, Winston just sits down and is like, and then Winston sat down and started reading a book, and what we have is, like, you know, like 20 pages of just him reading a book, and then he gets up and he's like, oh, and let me read some more of the book, and then he's reading, and I'm like, that is just such unsatisfying storytelling, and like, is there no way to bring that in without him just sitting down and reading a book and then just recounting the book? And what we have here is Esmond learns to read, and then she's like, oh, and now I will sit down and read the sagas. And what I've really enjoyed about the sagas in the previous books is that they were hinted at, and we found out about them, you know, there were some little bits in the chapter headings, or other people would say, oh, in the sagas this is what happens, and this is what, you know, in the sagas they say this, but actually it's like that. And here we just have someone sitting down and for a whole chapter just reading books and saying, oh, and then Saswatha went here, oh, and then Saswatha went, oh, and in this book Saswatha was the bad guy, and in this book Saswatha was the good guy. And I'm like, yeah, okay, we get it, that Saswatha was like the, you know, like the kind of a Camion Kellis character, and that some people saw him as a bad guy and some people saw him as a good guy, and sometimes he was the hero and sometimes, you know, sometimes he was this other character, sometimes he was a side character, sometimes he was the main character, sometimes he got people to do good things for bad reasons, and other people he got to do bad things for good reasons. And you're like, okay, I understand that we live in an ambiguous world, and that's what Kellis is going to be looking like, and that's what we're getting from Kellis, that sometimes he's going to be doing good stuff for bad reasons and sometimes bad stuff for good reasons. And it's okay, but it's like, why couldn't that have come through again in the service of the, like, in the story? Why couldn't it have been like, oh, we need something very important from, we need to find out an important bit of news or an important bit of information, and it's in the saga, so let's go and double check in the saga and find that. And you can actually have people looking through it and finding stuff, rather than it's like, this person is learning to read, they are reading the Odyssey, they are reading the Iliad, oh, the Odyssey is good because of this, and the Iliad is good because of that, and there was a battle at Troy because of this, and there was Odysseus went to Malta because of that, you know. It's just, again, not satisfying when you're literally reading about somebody reading a book. It's like, is reading a book the most interesting thing that can happen at this point of the story? Well, it turns out, yeah, because not a lot else is happening. What else have I got in my notes here? The story of the Holy War is complete. It's now just formalities. And that's what it feels like, actually, just formalities. It's like, okay, the Holy War has to get from here to there. And there's going to be a march along the way, but we can't just say, oh, they left Carrickshand and arrived at Shima, which is the two points at the start of this book. They're in Carrickshand, they end up in Shima. It's like, what happens along the way? Actually, nothing really happens along the way. Nothing interesting enough happens along the way. So it's filled up with this side story of Confess and Nea over in a different city doing other stuff. And with Esmond at reading and Camion teaching and Kellis learning magic and doing other stuff, and it's just, and I actually wrote in my updates on Goodreads, I said I skipped what came before. Oh no, that was at the beginning. It says, how can I get halfway through the book and feel like nothing has happened, like the story hasn't started or progressed yet? And that was at 50% of the book. And then other stuff, like suddenly we go, oh right, okay, so Kellis is going to meet his father, this is one of the first things that happened in the book. What's my note here? Oh no, boring geography as well. What I really liked about the previous books is that I kind of felt like the places were interesting. Like the open step that they're talking about at the start of the first book, you really get to know it, like the trackless step, that it's just all open plains. It's like, I'm guessing like the, you know, the Russian steppe, like Ukraine or something, or whatever it is, that kind of area of the world. And you're just like, okay, it's just people on horses and a few bits of cattle, and it just keeps going all the way to Mongolia. That's what we have here, all the way to the Ural Mountains or wherever it is. You know, you just keep going and you find some mountains in the end, but the mountains are 1,000 miles away, and in between there's just nothing. There's no civilization. And the stuff that happens in that situation kind of reflects that. And then they go to other places like the camp around the city. You can really feel what that's like, the camp around the city. And then in the second book, when the holy war sets off and they go through the mountains, and then they get to I can't remember. I should have opened the map in front of me here. Maybe three C's. Yeah, there it is. It's in my history there. Oh yeah, they get to Shigek. That's it. And I was talking about Shigek in the last book, how that kind of feels like the Nile in Egypt and Alexandria, and there's a library there. You kind of really feel what that's like. And then they go through the Karathay Desert, and I forgot to mention this in the previous review, but since I've actually read this book for the first time, I've actually been to quite a few more deserts. And last year I was driving in Oman, and I hired a car and had to drive down the coast and visited these different places, and I was like, oh, now I really understand like what it was like to go through the desert, but you know, that whole setup where the army is marching on one side of the hills in the desert, and then the people have to go and get the water deliveries, and they go through the hills. And I was like, oh, that's what this is like, you know, as I was driving down the coast of Oman. I was like, now I understand it, that actually it wouldn't have been possible to bring an army this side of the hills, even though they built a road along there now, but on the other side of the hills, that's where they would go. Oh, and people have to come through the hills to find this water or to pick up this water here. And yeah, and it really felt like somewhere. It really felt like they were situated somewhere. But then in this book, they go from Karaksan to Shima, Shima, that was it, I guess. The way you pronounce it in the book, Shima. And they're just going through villages. They're like, oh, and there's some villages. Oh, and there's some towns, and here's a city. And they get to Shima, and it never really feels like a place, unlike Karaksan, which felt like it had a real character, like it was a city under siege, and they arrive, and it was kind of described, and you understood what it was like, and the layout of the land. Even if it wasn't described that closely, you kind of had a feel for what it felt like. Whereas when they get to Shima, it's just like, oh yeah, Shima had some walls, and there's going to be a big battle here, and there was an aqueduct. Right, that's all you need to know. Let's go. And I never really felt like, it was a place. It's kind of mentioned a few times. Oh, it used to have a harbor, but the harbor silted up, and now the sea is a long way away. And it's all marshes around there. And I was like, yeah, okay, I know places like that. I've been to places like that in the world where you're like, oh, there used to be a harbor here, but now it's like 8 kilometers down the road there. That kind of stuff happens a lot, and it's here in this book. And I was like, okay, that could have been interesting, but it wasn't interesting. That wasn't explored, because all they needed was like, here we are at the end of the journey, get ready, here's a big battle. And so after all of the formalities, setting up the formality, you know, all of this, okay, what's happening now? And then there's this big battle, and the big battle at the end. When I first read it, I was like, okay, this is kind of like infuriating, kind of frustrating, because it would be at one place and there'd be a bit of battle here and then skip to somewhere else. Meanwhile, there's two other things going on, and you kept on going, here's a bit of battle. Ah, okay. Meanwhile, over here, Kellis is doing this. Ah, a bit more battle. Oh, meanwhile, Achaemenid is doing this. Here's a bit more battle. Ah, meanwhile, Nea is doing this. Here's a bit more battle. And all the other times when there's been battles in this book, it's been focused. It's like, okay, everybody is here. Everybody is in the same situation. Everybody is fighting for the same thing or against the same thing. There might be trickery involved. There might be anything like that, but it really did bring it up. It's like, let's get focused in on this battle, because to be honest, the battle is never the most important thing. And when R. Scott Baker is writing about the battle, it does feel very epic. It does feel very much like the Iliad, where it's like, okay, now they're around here, and this god is over here and doing this, and this main battle is going here, and this important person is struck down over here, and you think, well, we never really learned very much about those important people, except that, well, I remember him being mentioned in the previous battle, but he was totally out of the scene, but now he's back in the battle again. And there's all these great names, the greater and lesser names, and every time a greater or lesser name, you kind of zoom in on them, you see how they die, and then they zoom out, and they zoom in another big great name or another part of the army, see how they succeed, and then zoom out, and then that, all that kind of stuff. And it kind of gets you through the battle in the kind of like the big man of history kind of way, where it's just like, oh, everyone, always, it doesn't matter about the small people, it always focuses in down like, who is the big one, whose standard is still standing at the end of the battle? Okay, let's see how the standards fall. It's like they're a cipher for the larger elements of the battle, these great names. And it kind of gets you through the battle pretty quickly, and you can see all the moves, and then you end the battle, and you're like, oh, great. And it's not drawn out. That's what actually makes these battles interesting, is that it focuses down on those big, important moments. There are some smaller character moments, and of course, in some other battles, there is other stuff going on. It's like there could be a chase sequence over here, or this kind of zoom down into one of the main characters of the book, you know, one of our named viewpoint characters. Whereas here, in this book, it kind of tries to do that, but it's being interrupted all the time, and I was just like, just get back to the battle. How is this all happening at the same time as this conversation over here, and these people having sex over there? Like, why are we skipping around so much compared to the rest of the books? So there's that going on. The other thing about the battle is that I never thought the battle was going to lose. All the other time, I thought, hey, this could be the end, even though I've read the books before. You always really think that, oh, they are on the edge. There is going to be something, like, this could be the end, because we've seen this happen before with the Volga Holy War, and we've seen other battles fail, and we've seen other things. But here it's just like, they're there, they've wiped out all of the armies before, they've kind of just strolled into town, they've not had any hardships for ages, they've all got horses again, they've all got clothes, they've all, like, getting new slaves, and people are looking after them, it's all very nice. All they've got to do is destroy this, and they do. And there never really feels that, like, tension of, like, will they win or not? It's just like, how long is this battle going to last until it's over? That was the main thing that was happening. There is some fun magic stuff, and there's a lot of death swirling down. It's sort of like, and then death came swirling down. Now, I noticed this a lot more with the audiobook read through. You can't really skip over it much because someone's actually telling it to. It feels very much like, I know it's probably like a literary reference that I don't get. Death came swirling down. Probably from the Iliad or Odyssey or something. I should have really looked that up. I'm guessing it's from some epic literature, death came swirling down. But because it's repeated so often, like every time that someone is dying, it's like, hey, this feels a bit like, Slaughterhouse-5, where, you know, and so it goes. So I'd really actually like a fun edit of this book, of this series of books, that every time someone dies, just put, and so it goes, or death came swirling down, literally every death, and death came swirling down, death came swirling down. Whereas now it feels a bit inconsistent. It's like, oh, we've got to the end of this little subsection of the battle, and death came swirling down, and death came swirling down. I think I mentioned that on the last time I reviewed this book, back in 2009 or something, like, I don't remember. What else have I got here? Death came swirling down, so it goes, that's my note there. It never felt like a place, like, unlike Caraxand. Yes, I've mentioned that already. The audiobook is made a lot worse by the interruptions, because you'll be doing one thing and then suddenly it'll skip to somewhere else. And in the book, of course, you've got that, like, three lines of empty text, or like three little dots or three little stars or something between different scenes. And it's like, oh, now let's rejoin our heroes over here. Oh, let's rejoin our villain over here. Oh, let's rejoin the battle again. Whereas here, it just goes like, And now let's go, and it's just, there's like a, there's no transition from one to the other, and so tonally it felt off. And I understand what's going on, or what R. Scott Bakker is going for. He's like, we're going to reflect what's going on here, and with this battle, and this battle of wits here is going to be reflected by this real battle going over there. But just what else is going on except for the battle just isn't interesting enough for me. Kellis, of course, meets up with his father. That's what he wanted. Hey, he says right at the very beginning of the book, go and meet your father. Here he is at the end of the third book. He is meeting his father. But we know what's going on now. It's really obvious all the way through this book. It's been revealed, like, within the story, within what's happening, what that main story is. I don't want to give it away. But once it's all laid out, and it's sort of like, and now I will monologue to you and explain my dastardly deeds all along. Now I will monologue to you as though I was actually one step ahead of you, and I am now more powerful than you. Come join me, and together we will... And you're just like, it's just not interesting. It's like, and now I will go and meet my half-brother. And it's like, oh, he's got a half-brother. It's like, yes, no, he's got... I mean, maybe it's because... I've read this book before, but I know, like, even when I was reading it, when it was being set up, it was like, these two people, this character here and this character here, they're kind of like opposites of each other, but complementary opposites of each other. They probably have the same, similar kind of history, and one of them is mysterious and one of them is fully explained. And you're like, well, will the really mysterious one, will it, his whole mysteriousness be explained away by maybe being this person's half-brother? You're like, yeah, that is it. And when it comes, you're just like, thanks. Thanks for spelling that out that much. So this whole section is really just like, oh, we are now setting up the next trilogy. And then there's stuff with Achaemenid and Esmonette and the love triangle stuff. It's just not enough to sustain the climax of the book with that thing. And although Achaemenid does actually find some strength and he does fuck up a whole army single-handedly, which is pretty cool. And the ending of the book, actually, when he has that final confrontation with Kellis, he only finds himself a spine, finds himself a backbone. But again, I never really feel like... I mean, why did I have 17 hours of audiobook to get to that point? Why was this not a 5-hour book? Why wasn't this just an epilogue to the previous book? Why isn't this a prologue to the next series? This whole book is just sort of like people meandering around, stuff happening, things being explained to each other, people reading books, kind of a boring battle, which is, you know, like goes on too long. It doesn't have any focus. And the what focus it does have is split between these other things, and we keep getting these other stories and switching around. The end of the book is okay, but it just doesn't, like for the end of the series, it just, like, after the first story, which is like a 4-star book, you know, that first, you know, the darkness that comes before, and after the Warrior Prophet, which is like probably, it's probably got some of my favorite passages in any fantasy book that I've read, and some really interesting character moments, and it's just really, really good. And then this is just like, it just flops there, and I was like, why did I read this again? And I don't know why I read it. I thought I might get something new out of it, but it's just worse. Than it was just a worse experience than before, and it's just not that interesting. And then the mandate, how they come in the end, they just kind of capitulate, and all these other people just, it's just like, well, is this it? Was it really that easy? Like, everything in this book just came along and Kellis wins? And it's just easy for him? Everything was just easy, yet he just did it all? And it's like, well, yeah, that's what the book was about. Somebody coming in, and it's the rise of a dictator. But it's just like, didn't we have this in Dune? Like, back in the 1960s or whenever Dune was written, it's like, yeah, we've had this kind of thing where someone goes away and confronts the father and does this thing and goes into the trance and all that kind of stuff, and then becomes and takes over at the end and marries the right person, and everyone bows down to them at the end. And it's just like, I just wanted sort of like a battle at the end, which was like, shows, well, I didn't even want a battle at the end. It's like, why do we have to have that big battle at the end? Why couldn't have all of this just come to a head in Karak-Sand? Like, all of the crucial scenes in this could have just happened in Karak-Sand, or just after, or in an epilogue. And it makes me think that someone has gone, oh, I've got a 3-book series, and he did so well, put so much into the second book, that you're like, oh, shit, I forgot to leave anything interesting to happen in the third book. Well, what can we have? Oh, well, let's just have the big battle. Okay, let's have the big battle. Oh, let's have the confrontation with the father. Okay, let's have the confrontation. Let's have this thing. There are some interesting things, like, and someone mentioned on Goodreads in the, on my review, commented on my review, they said that some interesting stuff does happen, like some of the metaphysical stuff that you think he's writing in metaphor, but it turns out that it's not a metaphor, it's actually something metaphysical. And I was like, oh yeah, that really makes sense, because there's this bit at the end of the second book where Kellis, he kind of takes out his heart and holds his heart in the air, and when you're reading it, you're like, oh well, that's a nice metaphor and stuff. And then in this next book, they're like, oh, how did Kellis do that thing with his heart? That was it some kind of trick, and what was going on there? And there's some other things in this book, and it does make you think that, ah, okay, so in a world where magic happens and there's really hell and there's damnation and there's gods and there really is gods and stuff like that, and there's magic happens, why can't there be miracles? Why can't some stuff happen that is just unexplainable or unexplained, and it happens, and then you're like, oh, so that's a thing, and that was magic done by someone, like, accidentally, or was it magic? I'm not even entirely sure. So there are some things in there where you're kind of like reflecting on what is reality or what isn't reality, or was this a miracle, or was this magic, or was this trickery? And there's some interesting stuff in this book like that, but again, it's just on this background of like, this is a 17-hour audiobook that could have been 5 hours. I just don't even remember all that happens in this book. Like, there's, like, in the second book, when I was reading it or listening to it as the audiobook, like, everything that came along, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this part. Oh, I remember this scene. Oh, I remember what happens here. Oh, they're going into the desert now. Oh, they're coming through here. Oh, they reach, like, everything that came to it, I was like, oh, right, yeah, I remember this. Oh, right, yeah, I remember that. In this book, everything I was getting to, I was like, well, I'm not surprised I didn't remember that. Oh, and I'm not surprised I didn't remember that. Oh, and that thing, not surprised I didn't remember that either. And then they get to the battle, and I was like, oh, yeah, I remember how long this battle goes on and how boring it was last time. So anyway, I think I'm going to wrap this up. This is a 2-star book. Overall, though, the series is much better than this. Looking here at the episode lists I have on sfbrp.com, if you want to know all the books that I've reviewed and they're all listed by, you can list them by episode number and author and book and by star rating and by length and by everything. And by how big the audio file is. That's just in there anyway. I was just looking up. I gave the Prince of Nothing series 3.5 stars last time, mainly because the first two books are so good, but this book is such a dip down. The Judging Eye, the next book, the first book in the second series, is a 4-star book. The White Look Warrior, 4.5 star books. All of these books are 4 and 4.5 star books of the 5 books that have come out so far, except this one, which I'm just going to have to give 2 stars because it's just not good enough. It's really not good enough. It's one of those things that I just wish somebody would go in and edit it and go, you know, all this stuff over here, don't need that. I know this stuff here, let's just cut all that out. And this stuff here, someone just says, hey, read this scene, read that chapter, and that chapter, and you've got all that you need out of this book, and then you can start the next series. Like, read the first 2 books, read these chapters in the 3rd book, and then in the next trilogy, in the next series of books, which is, I should actually look at it. This is The Prince of Nothing, book 3. What's the next one called? The Aspect Emperor, isn't it? Yeah, Aspect Emperor, number 1, Judging Eye. It's sort of like between Warrior Prophet and Judging Eye, read these scenes and these chapters from A Thousandfold Thought, and then just start the Judging Eye again, and it's going to be good enough. You're going to get everything that you need out of it. So yeah, let's wrap it up there. The next book I'm going to be reviewing is probably a short story collection called Her Smoke Rose Up Forever. By James Tiptree Jr. There's a few less R's in there than I was trying then. That'll probably be the next one. And there's some other books that I'm reading. Juliana's probably going to read it, and we're going to start off. Juliana's reading The Fire Upon the Deep. She's never read the Vernon Vinge books before, and now she's getting into them and thoroughly enjoying them. It's always fun to see people reading that book and going, ah, now you're understanding what the aliens are like in that book. So I'm going to finish up now here with an Audible advert. If you've enjoyed this podcast, and if you want to support the podcast, why not go over to Audible. audibletrial.com/sfbrp, and by going to that link, you actually by signing up for a free trial, you can support the SFBRP and support my book buying and reading and other costs for the SFBRP. That's absolutely fantastic. And in return, by going there and signing up for a free trial, you get any free book that you want. And I would really suggest, if you're just gonna get one book, why not get Fire Upon the Deep by Vernon Vinge? That's going to be my suggestion. I would suggest one of these books that I'm talking about today, like The Darkness That Comes Before or The Warrior Prophet, but that's kind of 2 books. And if you just want a free trial, why not check out one of the best science fiction books of the 1990s, A Fire Upon the Deep by Vernon Vinge. It's got some of the best aliens, got some really cool technology, got some fun story, and always makes, you know, top 10 lists of recent science fiction, top 100 lists of science fiction. It really is that good. So go and check it out on audibletrial.com/SFBRP. And help support me and the SFBRP. That would be absolutely fantastic. I think that's all. You can email me, luke@juggler.net. I do reply to every single email. If you're going to recommend a book to me, please don't just send me a Goodreads recommendation without any text or without any reasoning. If you just keep sending me stuff, I'm never going to get to it. The best thing to do is email me or send me a recommendation on Goodreads with an explanation of why I should be reading this book. Or check out the SFBRP Goodreads listener group, and there's a thread there called Books I Would Like to See Reviewed. If you post it in there and other people agree with you, I'm much more likely to read the book that you want me to. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurridge. Of course, become my friends on Goodreads, and I think that's it for now. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.